It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Phillip Slavin of the 1012 podcast here. Have you been listening to this show for a while and thought, you know, if that guy can do this, then so can I? Well, you're probably right, and it's worth giving a shot. The one question you're going to ask yourself is, how do I get my podcast out for everyone to listen to on iTunes, on Spotify? Well, you're going to need a hosting site, and if I may make a suggestion, go with Anchor. It's easy and it's free, which is great for podcast hobbyists who aren't exactly expecting this to make a lot of income, especially starting out. Anchor is fantastic. Anchor by Spotify is the easiest way to make a podcast with everything you need in one place. It has the tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And when hosting on Anchor, you can distribute your show on listening platforms like we mentioned, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. And again, it is totally free. It's fantastic. It is what we use. And if it's what we use, it's what we're going to suggest to others. So download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Again, that is the Anchor app or anchor.fm to get started with your podcast. Welcome to the 1012, the podcast that covers all 10 teams in the Big 12 Conference. I'm your host, Phillip Slavin. Thank you for joining us today. Yes, episode on a Wednesday. As I told you, three episodes this week. We are wrapping up our season previews. We had Texas on Monday, Oklahoma State today, Iowa State coming up on Friday. We're going to wrap up all our season previews so that we can just focus on the season and some other things starting next week when we will officially be in Big 12 football week. Football started last weekend. We get football this weekend. And then the Big 12 is now less than 2 weeks away. It's very exciting. In fact, so exciting. Look, you know, when the schedule came out for the Big 12, like there was excitement. It was nice to have that. But considering the Big 10 had just put theirs out and then 3 days later canceled their season, there was still a certain hesitation. Season's gotten closer. Practices have continued. COVID numbers have come out. Practices have halted. Teams have announced how many students and fans they're going to allow in the stadium. But it's all still felt a bit muted compared to this point normally. Now, normally this is obviously we would have football, but this close to the start of the season, it just felt so much more muted than in years past. And that's understandable with everything going on. But now, today, or at least as of 11 o'clock a.m. on Tuesday, when the Big 12 announced the kickoff times for its first week of the season, it's happening, folks. Like, we're done. We're not talking about if the season happens. The season is happening. We don't know how long the season's going to last, but I don't want to spend time on that. We're just going to focus on the fact that for the first time, it really just take a deep breath, let it out. We're having college football. We are having not just college football, not just an FCS game on one Saturday night. We are having Big 12 football. Big 12's week one or week two overall schedule is out. Love, love, love it. Aside from one thing, we'll get to that in a second. Kicking things off on Friday, September 11th with SMU at TCU on FS1 at 8 p.m. We get a Friday night Big 12 game. We get a little early taste. Oh, I love it. And that's a great one to put there. I'm glad it's that and not like, sorry, Kansas, Coastal Carolina. Like, this is a nice one to put on SMTCU. My one complaint. Saturday morning, 11 a.m. kickoff, three games. Louisiana Tech at Baylor, Louisiana at Iowa State, and Eastern Kentucky at West Virginia. There's no way I'm watching all three of those. There's no way I'm going to be able to do it. So, sorry, West Virginia. I will not see your season opener. I hope you guys do well. I think you will. Enjoy. I'm going to have to flip back and forth between Baylor, Louisiana Tech, and Iowa State, Louisiana, which I'm thinking back and forth between Fox and ESPN. By the way, that Fox 11 a.m. game, that is their marquee game. Fox primarily puts Big Ten, Pac-12, and Big 12 there, which means get ready for 11 a.m. Fox games, Big 12, every week. It's just going to happen. Like, maybe they'll put a Conference USA game. Maybe. It's going to be Big 12 every week. There's going to be a good Big 12 game on that channel, Fox, 11 a.m. every Saturday that the Big 12 is playing. It's awesome. So, Louisiana Tech at Baylor, Louisiana at Iowa State, Eastern Kentucky at West Virginia at 11, Arkansas State at Kansas State at 2:30 on FS1. It's the only midday game. This is what I mean. Like, you could have moved Eastern Kentucky, West Virginia to the 2:30 slot. We could have had two at a time. I could manage that. That's fine. Missouri State at Oklahoma, pay-per-view game at 6 p.m. No, I'm not paying the $55 to watch that game. Not going to do it. Tulsa at Oklahoma State on either ESPN or ESPNU. Not sure what we're deciding about here, but 6:30. UTEP at Texas on the Longhorn Network at 7 p.m. Yeah, I'm probably just going to primarily watch Oklahoma State, Tulsa. I might watch Texas UTEP until Texas is blown out UTEP, which is, what, about 2-3 minutes into the game? Probably. No Pac-12 at night. Instead, we're going to have Big 12 at dark. Coastal Carolina at Kansas on FS1 at 9 p.m. Houston Baptist at Texas Tech on ESPN Plus at 7 o'clock. I have ESPN Plus. I've got the Hulu, ESPN Plus, Disney Plus package. Of course I have Disney Plus. I have an 18-month-old daughter, and I got another daughter on the way, and they have The Mandalorian, and we watch Bluey, which is an Australian cartoon that's 8 minutes long, and they're hilarious, and my daughter loves them, and I love them because I appreciate cartoons that aren't just geared for children, but also entertain the adults. So I have ESPN Plus. I'll flip back and forth. Again, three games at the same time. We'll figure that out. A few other games announced. Kansas State at Oklahoma, Fox 11 a.m., Red River Rivalry, Fox 11 a.m. Just get ready for that a lot. That's what you're going to get. A lot. Guys, we're going to have real football. I love it. I can nitpick the schedule because I want to be able to watch like two at a time or as many as I can, but I'm not going to sit here and complain. It's football. We have a schedule. It's happening. It's all happening. I know I'm excited for that Saturday morning. I am so excited to start my day on that Saturday morning. Wake my daughter up, have some breakfast. Pour myself a cup of coffee, add a little something to it. My usual Saturday morning tradition now is creme de tequila, which is basically Mexican Baileys. It's creamy tequila. It is tequila Baileys. Okay, it's delicious. Ever since my wife and I went on our honeymoon and brought a bottle back, I've been drinking it. But it's not just about the extra kick I put in my coffee. It's also about the coffee I'm going to be drinking. This season, I'll be drinking Lazy Fair coffee. Ethically sourced coffee beans from all over the world, roasted right in the heart of Big 12 country in DFW. Got a great variety of flavors, including dark and light roasts. They've also got a great coffee dry rub, perfect for whatever you plan to throw on the grill on Saturday. You guys, I mean, I think you're like me. You like to light the grill, throw some stuff on, some brats, hot dogs, pork chop, steak, burgers, whatever. Whatever you like to do on a college football. But whether you like your coffee in the afternoon, evening, whatever you want to dry rub with, Lazy Fair coffee. Okay, I love this stuff. It's really, really good. So visit lazyfaircoffee.com, LazyFairCoffee.com. Grab a couple bags. Go to checkout. Enter the promo code 1012, TEN12. Get 10% off your order. They also offer free delivery for all orders in the DFW area. So if you live in DFW, might as well order. You get 10% off and you get free delivery on really, really good coffee. This is good stuff. I promise. Okay. you will appreciate it. So visit lazyfaircoffee.com. Don't forget the promo code 1012. Let me know what you think. Hit us up in the DMs on Twitter at 1012 podcast, TEN, the number 12, the word podcast. Hit us up on Instagram, 1012 pod, TEN12POD. Don't forget to tune in tonight, Wednesday night, 7:30 p.m. Central Time. Albie Shore is going to join us for our Instagram Live. We do an Instagram Live at 7:30 p.m. CT every Wednesday night. Exclusive content. Albie's going to join us. We're going to talk about all the transfers Texas Tech is landing. So make sure, give us a follow there. Tune in for that. Very excited. Scott Wright, the Oklahoman, joining us now. We're going to be talking about Oklahoma State, previewing the Cowboys. Lots to talk about. So with all that said, let's get to it. ¶¶ All right, very excited today. We're going to talk about the team that is nearest and dearest to my heart, Oklahoma State. Joining us, Scott Wright of The Oklahoman, covers the team for the paper there in Oklahoma City. Scott Wright, thank you for joining us today on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so let's start with the topic that I am most interested in at this point, and that would be the offensive line. Oklahoma State, you could argue, went into the offseason back in January feeling pretty good about what they had. But then you lose Galloway, basically to medical retirement. You have to have two players booted from the team, Bryce Bray being one of them, and another guy who's going to be a backup. Now you've got an offensive line that I'm not going to say is, I still think it's one of the best, four best in the conference. We ranked offensive lines last week. I had them at fourth. So I still have some high expectations. Part of that being, you know, Tevin Jenkins, one of the best, I think, one of the best offensive linemen in the Big 12 being on that line. And as I've seen, being moved to left tackle is a big thing. But I'm just curious, how are things going for the Oklahoma State offensive line? What does it look like as far as what we might see on the field when the season kicks off on September 12th?
You know, I think they feel really good about their group from center going to the left. I think they see promise on the right side. So you mentioned Tevin Jenkins at left tackle. That's a huge move. I'm with you. He's one of the best linemen in the league. Didn't allow a sack last year until the bowl game, and is a really athletic, really big and physical. So I'm a big fan of Tevin Jenkins. And then you've got Josh Sills, the grad transfer from West Virginia, who 2 years ago was second team All Big 12. And then was injured last year and now moves into that left guard spot at Oklahoma State. I think he has a chance to be really good. And at center, Ry Schneider has just always been really reliable. You go back even to 2 years ago when he had to step in for Johnny Wilson in an injury situation. He comes in and handles himself really well and played well in some spot starts last year as well. So you got to like what he's doing right there. And then you go going to the right from there. Right guard is probably the biggest question mark. I'm hearing a lot of good things about Carmingham, who's 6'8", 308, and which is huge for a guard. But it sounds like he has really impressed some people. Most importantly, Charlie Dickey, the offensive line coach, and looks like he's probably the favorite to win that job right now. And then at right tackle, you've got Hunter Anthony, who got a few starts last season under his belt and got some experience and went through some growing pains, but looks to really be coming through and coming out of that on the right side of things. So as a redshirt sophomore, you know, 6'6", 318, really moves better now that he's lost about 15 pounds and is really setting himself up, I think, for a good season at that right tackle spot. So I'm with you. I think top four in the league is still a fair analysis of where Oklahoma State is right now, even though they could have been one of the best in the league had things worked out differently. They might have been right up there at the top, but still very solid. And Charlie Dickey is known for getting a lot out of guys that you haven't heard of before.
So, you know, Oklahoma State loaded with that wide receiver. You know, Tylan Wallace coming back off of that ACL injury. You've got Dylan Stoner coming back, Landon Wolf. Braden Johnson was a guy that kind of started to take a step forward last season. It's not a position group where you're like, they need help here. And yet they have added two transfers. D. Anderson, LSU transfer, came in back in the spring. So he's part of the team. And then just these last couple weeks, you add a wide receiver transfer from Washington State in a grad transfer. Is this a situation of just the rich getting richer, or are there actually some concerns and reason for them to try and bring, you know, both D. Anderson and then, of course, the guy from Washington State in here this last couple of weeks?
Yeah, you know, I think both cases were a little bit of the same goal, which was to get a guy with some size who could who go out there and play. You know, I know that Casey Dunn was really excited about D. Anderson at the very beginning of preseason camp. But he's had some injury issues, had some trouble staying on the field, and hasn't been all that impressive when he's been out there. So I think that the Tay Martin addition probably doesn't happen if D. Anderson's playing a little bit better in his role as kind of the big guy to offset Braden Johnson's speed at that other outside receiver position opposite of Tylan Wallace. So I think that the move to go out and get Tay Martin from Washington State was probably a little bit reactionary to what they were seeing in camp with Anderson having trouble staying on the field. So go out and add a guy who was much more productive throughout his career. He's not as not as big. D. Anderson 6'6" and 230 pounds, and Martin is 6'3" and about 185. But Martin is a guy who has over 1,600 receiving yards in his career in three seasons at Washington State. Obviously, a place that throws the ball around a little bit more than LSU does or did prior to a year ago. So you can see the production numbers skew the way they do, but this is a guy that's made big catches in big games for Washington State. So we'll see. He's just now getting in and getting set up, and we'll start getting acclimated here in the next few days. But you know, a guy that maybe has an opportunity to bring some size to that position. Whereas Braden Johnson is not the biggest guy, but really has some incredible speed and can be a big play guy and really make some plays. We saw that he's improved his hands over the last couple of years and made some big catches down the stretch, especially in the bowl game with his big game that he had against Texas A&M. So you know, you look at that group and what they can do, and it is a little bit of the case of Rich getting richer because they are so talented across the board already, and they've got guys waiting in the wings for opportunities to play. But it's a really good situation to be in for Oklahoma State.
Yeah, we all know Chuba Hubbard. We all know how good he is. Now, he got rode hard a lot last season. Part of that is when you have a guy that talented, you're gonna give him the ball. You want to give him the ball. But you could also argue part of that was not a lot of good options as far as giving him a spell. L.D. Brown seemed to kind of have things click on the back half of the season, but there was times early on where if he was on the field, you kind of were concerned. You've got L.D. Brown back. Desmond Jackson was a JUCO guy who didn't play last year. DeAndre Glass was a redshirt freshman. You bring in a late addition to this class, and Dominic Richardson is a true freshman. Looking at the other running backs aside from Chuba, do you see more opportunity for Chuba to take a break, or is this going to be another season where he's running the ball all the time, partially because of his talent and partially because of necessity?
I think that they're going to find ways to get him off the field, or at least give him a break here and there in some spot situations. Because I think Desmond Jackson has taken some steps forward in his game and can be a little bit more physical presence than L.D. Brown could be at times last year. L.D. is a strong runner, but not the biggest guy, and obviously has great speed when he gets into open field. But I think that with Jackson showing some improvement during his redshirt year last year, you've got two guys who can come in and you know, whether it's coming in and being a guy that takes the ball in a two-back set when Chuba is on the field, or they get Chuba off the field and let him rest for a few plays at a time. Either way, I think you've got guys that are more capable now of handling that. LD is a solid backup and a mostly reliable guy. Like you said, the second half of the season was much more productive than he was the first half. But I think you've got guys who can help out a little bit better now than they could last season.
I want to turn to the defense. Obviously, Oklahoma State, you know, defense is something we get to talk a lot about from an excited standpoint. But I'm feeling very best defense since 2013 right now. Mm-hmm. When Jim Knowles was hired, I think a lot of smart people saying, you've got to give this till year three. He's going to come in, he's going to bring a new scheme. You're going to have to develop guys to fit what he likes to do. So you have to give that time. Year one, a little bit rough, you know, it was growing pains for both the young players. So they played a lot of young guys and Jim Knowles in his first season. It really seemed like things started to click back half of last season. The defense played really well. And I could argue that the defense is the reason they won some games last year. And that's not something you've been able to say for Oklahoma State a lot here these past few years. Now you come into a season where I believe, based off Bill Connolly's numbers, Oklahoma State's returning production on defense is ranked 8th in the country. Only big question really is replacing AJ Green at corner. Now that, and you could argue a couple spots at safety just because of some moves that were made. But how is, I don't like to take coach speak too close to heart, but as someone who talks to these guys regularly and is around the team a lot, do you feel like they're talking about this defense in a way that should give you real excitement, or does it feel a little coach speaky?
It feels legit, because Jim Knowles isn't the type that throws out a lot of overexcited coach speak. He uses his share of coach speak, but not like this. Not talking about guys and position groups and the defensive unit as a whole with such heavy praise. That's really unique for him. Usually it's more about, you know, we need to do this, we need to do that. We could be good if we do this, those type of things. But he is really, I think, genuinely excited about what this defense can do because of all the starters that are back, all the veterans that are on the field, the improvements that other guys have made, and all of that wrapped into one has him, I think, genuinely excited.
So let's talk about that one cornerback spot. Obviously, Rodarius Williams is back. This could be his first year being the guy. You know, he's kind of been the Robin to AJ Green's Batman last season and the year before. But this year, he gets to be the guy. And that feels like a pretty secure thing. Obviously, it's a big difference between being number one versus number two. But let's talk about that other hole that they got to fill up. Obviously, they brought in Christian Holmes from Missouri, guy who started quite a few games in the SEC. That's pretty legitimate. Jerick Bernard making the move over. He was a solid player over at safety previously. And then, of course, you've got Thomas Harper, who I think is probably going to end up being a guy that sees a lot of time. What are you hearing as far as that other starting spot? It seems to be one of the only like starting spot big question mark as far as the defense goes.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what they do with all of those guys, because they've got so much talent back there. I think Jerick Bernard, Converse, and Christian Holmes are going to battle it out and probably both play. Maybe you see Jim Knowles take some time to get Rodarius Williams a little bit of breather from time to time and move one of those other guys over to the other side, do some different things to get those guys on the field. And then the position that Jerick Bernard, Converse is leaving behind. You know, you got Tanner McAllister, Thomas Harper there. I think those guys battle it out and probably have a little bit of a platoon role well. And you see Knowles really tap into the depth that he's built in the secondary. You know, I think that you could see opportunities for a guy like Jason Taylor to get on the field and give some other guys a rest from time to time at one of those safety spots, whether it's Trey Sterling or Colby Harvell-Peel. I think the depth that they've built on that defensive secondary right now is one of their strong points when you mix in the talent that they've got. So I think Knowles is going to do his best to keep those guys fresh and make sure that he's got his best guys on the field as much as possible, but is keeping their legs fresh as well.
You know, when you bring a lot of guys back, you don't tend to talk about a weakness, but just because you bring guys back doesn't necessarily mean that means that that's a great position. I would argue the defensive line last year was the weakest part of the defense. And I'm not saying that they were bad, but compared to what you got at linebacker and what you got at safety and what you got at corner, you could argue the defensive line was the, I hate saying it, weak makes it sound like they were bad. They weren't bad, but they were the weakest compared to everything else. But this year, you know, you get Trace Ford is in year two. We're still waiting to hear whether or not Colin Clay is going to be able to be a part of this. Israel Antoine didn't get to play for a while as they were dealing with some issues as far as paperwork. Looking at this defensive line and the ends involved, and even if you want to talk about, you know, Calvin Bundage coming back and seeing if he gets to just play linebacker, if he gets thrown up there as well, what kind of expectations should we have for this Oklahoma State defensive line? Is this something where this is experience that's going to take a step forward, or is this going to be kind of on par with what we saw last year?
I think this group is ready to take another step forward. I think that, you know, Trace Ford, you know, even though he revealed that he had COVID-19 in mid-July and lost almost 10 pounds. Up until that point, all the talk about him had been that he was bigger and stronger and faster. And that seems to be the case with him. Looks like he's ready to take a step forward. Brock Martin is a solid and reliable guy. You look on the interior with Cameron Murray, Israel Antoine, Samuel Tuihalamaka, I thought was a guy that didn't get a lot of credit last year, played really well. Sione Asi, I think, has a chance to come back after dealing with some injuries last year and be a contributor. You mentioned they don't know about Colin Clay yet. He could be a guy that becomes a real serious contributor as well. All along this defensive front, they've got enough guys where they can go 8, 9, 10 deep and keep those guys fresh and roll guys in that are dangerous and good playmakers. Cameron Murray is a guy that had just a sneaky good season, because you get in there in the middle of the defensive line and the majority of your plays that you make are really setting up plays for other guys to make. You're taking on a double team or filling a gap or busting a gap or whatever it might be that you do that busts up a play and sets up a tackle for someone else. And Cameron Murray turned out to be a really good nose guard by the end of the season. I think you're going to see him progress even farther. So many of these guys were young, either in terms of actual age or just in terms of experience. Murray is one of those guys that hadn't played a ton prior to last season and now is feels like a seasoned vet out there. So I think that this group has the potential to be even better than what they were a year ago and maybe go and put up some numbers like the defensive front of two seasons ago, where you had a lot more quarterback pressure and a lot more tackles for loss and those type of things being made by defensive line guys. Whereas last year, you didn't have a ton of those type of plays. You had some disruption, but it was linebackers that were making more of your tackles for loss and plays like that, where I think the defensive line can get more involved in that this season.
So as much as we want to talk about players and on the field, we're going to have to talk about off the field for Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
To call this summer tumultuous would be, I think, apt. I don't want to go through everything if everybody doesn't know about the OAN shirt and Chuba Hubbard and everything else. Go Google it. I don't want to rehash it all here. Been watching the ESPN Plus documentary. We've obviously had some talk about it, but I don't feel like we really hit as hard on it as I was thinking we would. But I'm curious at this point. Things seem from the outside looking in like they are better. Obviously Friday, I believe it was Thursday or Friday that practice was canceled so that the players could go off into small groups and talk about things related to the police shooting in Wisconsin. What are you getting as far as the vibe of how are things inside the program compared to where they were earlier this summer? Have the changes players are looking for being made? Is this something that's going to hang over the program all year and all season long? Or is this something that, I don't want to say is in the rearview mirror, but that we're far enough past that it shouldn't be a concern as far as the season goes?
Yeah, I don't see any reason for concern because of it. I do think that there are changes being made and progress being made in terms of how the coaches deal with the players, and in particular the relationship that Mike Gundy has with the players. I think that he really had his eyes open to how he was managing his program from that standpoint. And he saw players being frustrated that they didn't have a better relationship with him, that they didn't feel that that he understood them very well. And I think that was the most important thing that came out of everything that went down. And I think that it's not all positive, but I think that there are steps in the right direction that are happening right now. And I think that's the most important thing. And I think that will help them smooth things out and all be on the same step going forward Like you said, Friday was I think probably an important day. We haven't got to talk to players about it yet, but we will in the next couple of days and get to find out what they thought about that. But taking that day off to discuss, you know, the racial injustice that that our country is facing right now was an important step for the program. I felt after the way things had gone over the summer.
Have you had a chance to watch the first three episodes of the documentary so far? What and if so, what have you thought about them?
I was with you in terms of how they addressed the summer stuff. I was expecting a little more, especially considering some of the things that had come out that had been publicized prior to the documentary airing. It's been interesting. And I'm looking forward to following it along, but I thought they might go a little bit deeper into some of the summer stuff and the OAN shirt and you know, Chuba Hubbard's activism and some different things like that they really stayed away from.
Yeah, it felt a little bit glossed over so far. I keep kind of hoping something else will come out. I guess my thing is it's not something that I want to have drug up over and over and over again, but at some point it felt like an opportunity to really put an end cap on it with the documentary. And so far it just kind of feels like I'm a little with what we know about it to almost not address it at all, or the way it has been just feels a little bit kind of like, did we really learn our lesson, or are we just going to try and keep it all internal? I'm not always sure that's the best way to do things.
Right. They had some content that, you know, that came out that was publicized on ESPN that hasn't even been addressed really in the documentary series itself, which was a little bit odd to me. I'm kind of with you. I thought they would go a little bit more into it, and you're right. It could have been a good way to kind of put all of that in put it behind them.
Well, I mean, like I said, we're three episodes in, so maybe we'll get more from it as we move along.
Right.
The coaching staff pretty much same. Few changes, however. Obviously, Sean Gleason no longer the OC. He's up at Rutgers in New Jersey. Longtime wide receiver coach Casey Dunn now taking over as the offensive coordinator. And Oklahoma State has hired Tim Rattay to come in and be the quarterback coach with Spencer Sanders. Sorry, baby's been crying for a while, so I'm a little bit flustered. I am someone who is in a bit of wait and see on Casey Dunn. You always kind of question when someone who has been a long time position coach takes over as an OC. And I'm not saying that he can't do a good job. That's not it at all. But it's very much a, okay, let's see how this goes. What are you hearing so far as to how he is acclimating to the position change, and how the kind of the feeling is about the offense with him at the head of it so far?
You know, the thing that he had going for him in taking over that position is that he's one of those coaches that always seems to build a relationship with all the players, regardless of whether they're his guys or not. And that's one of the things that's always fascinated me about him anyway. But I think that helped him step into this role because it wasn't this voice that players suddenly weren't used to hearing. They were used to having conversations with him, hearing from him, different things. It's just, it's a little bit different now because he is the OC and he's in charge now, and probably a little bit more in their business now than he was. But still, not a totally foreign voice. So I think that has helped. You know, I think that the time that they lost in spring really hurt him, because that would have been a great opportunity for him to, you know, to spend some time, you know, watching things from up top and calling plays and getting used to situations and down and distance things and kind of finding his footing as to what kind of coordinator he wants to be, what kind of play caller he wants to be. So that's the thing that I think he is still working on and is probably a little bit unsure of himself still in some of those situations. And that's the thing that Mike Gundy and everyone else is waiting to see. There's a lot of those things that you're just not going to learn until you're put in that situation when the lights are on a Saturday. So that's going to be, I think you're right to be in a wait and see mode with Casey Dunn because there's, you need to see a few games of him as a play caller before you really get a feel for what type of guy he's going to be. I mean, the offense is going to be the same for the most part. We know that because Mike Gundy, he maintains the offense no matter who the coordinator is. All these coordinator changes that they've had over the past, I'd say 8 to 9 years, the offense has always stayed the same for the most part. So, so the offense itself isn't as big a question as what kind of a play caller Casey Dunn is going to be. And, if Mike Gundy doesn't shackle him too much, I think he's going to be a really aggressive play caller who will be someone that the fans enjoy. The question will be how much he gets reined in on some of those things, because he seems like the type of guy to me that would be willing to go for a lot of fourth downs and push the envelope and in tempo and all of those things. So I think he could be a really fun OC to watch, but we'll see what kind of trust Mike Gundy has in him to do some of those things from the get-go.
So I'm really interested because you brought that up. There's something that Oklahoma State fans seem to have talked about quite a bit when it comes to offensive coordinator with Mike Gundy. And when you talk about Dana Holgorsen and you talk about Todd Monken, the general consensus has always been they were both kind of, how do I put this nicely, shut up, Gundy. I'm going to do what I want. That's the vibe everyone has always kind of got from them. Right. And Gundy was able to let them just kind of do that. And it never felt that way with Mike Yurcich. It didn't really feel that way the last season with Sean Gleason. And the consensus I seem to have gotten is people or fans seem to think that's we might get more of Holgorsen and Monken in that state than Yurcich and Gleason with Casey Dunn. Obviously, Casey Dunn and Mike Gundy, two guys, known each other for a very long time, worked together for a very long time, have a really good relationship. What do you lean to? Do you think this is going to be more of a Monken, Holgorsen, I'm going to kind of do my thing, let me do it? Or will he lean more towards Gundy's approval? I don't know, for lack of a better word coming to mind.
I think it'll be a little bit different than the Holgorsen Monken situation in that he is going to turn to Gundy for probably some advice at times and check with him on things and get his input. But I think that he will have more trust from Gundy to do things on his own a little bit more than definitely more than Gleason had last year and definitely more than Yurcich had his first couple of years. I think that Yurcich built that over time. And by the end of his run there was probably had a little bit more trust than we realized from Gundy and a little bit more autonomy in the offense. But I think that Dunn will have, he's got that trust already built in from all the time that he spent with Gundy and in offensive meetings and on the staff, that those building blocks are already in place. And I think that he's going to have a pretty good leash when it comes to those things. It'll just be about him getting comfortable and finding his footing and determining, when he wants to talk to Gundy about something and when Gundy wants to chime in and give his opinion.
So, let's talk. I want to talk about the schedule last. Tim Rattayan is the new quarterback coach. Spencer Sanders had a nice freshman season, but it was a freshman season with a lot of turnovers. Both focus has mostly been on interceptions, but combine the interceptions with the fumbles that were lost, that was a lot. Obviously, there's some growing pains when you're a first time starter. And that seemed to improve as the season went on. I think some of that was a more of a simplification of the offense for Sanders, maybe, than just him just making pure improvement. Rete brought in to be his quarterback coach. What is their relationship like so far? And what are you hearing about the improvements that Sanders has made so far in this offseason?
You know, the interesting thing is to hear them talk about the connection that those guys made. And you know, I've only had very minimal interaction with Tim Rete so far, but he seems like he and Spencer Sanders personality wise would really click. And that's been kind of the reports that have come out, is that they hit it off really quickly. They're very similar in their competitive motivations. And, you know, Rete was a gunslinger type of quarterback, a really confident player, and that's what Sanders wants to be. That's what he was in high school, and obviously you mentioned the growing pains that he went through in the middle of his freshman season, in particular. You know, he's wanting to work past those things and be better and get back to being that confident player that he was in high school. And I think that Rete is the perfect guy for drawing that out of him. You hear Sanders talk about, you know, the work that they do together, and you know, how he's got him, getting through his reads faster and making decisions faster, and all of those things that are so important, and feeling confident in the reads that he's making. Those are the keys that sound like they're pointing in the right direction for that relationship between the quarterback and his coach, and for the on-field performance of Spencer Sanders, because you know, he's got to take care of the ball better, and he's got to be putting himself in position to get the ball to the right guys at the right times. And if he's doing that, then it's going to be a throwback type of season to a few years ago with this offense, with what they can do and the type of numbers they can put up, some crazy numbers if Sanders is playing confidently and making good choices.
Schedule is – the homes and aways are the same, but obviously the order has completely changed for Oklahoma State. They keep Tulsa as their non-conference game. It makes a lot of sense. They got a good relationship with TU. That's going to make it easy to try to make sure that testing is done the way that they want. But I'm not sure. I can't decide if the Big 12 did Oklahoma State some favors or didn't do them any favors. They do have two sets of back-to-backs at Kansas and at Baylor, and then Kansas State and Oklahoma. But those are split up by idle weeks, so it's not that they have to go on the road in simultaneous weeks. I think they're one of only two teams to not have to do so. You get to start things off kind of light with West Virginia and Kansas. But you've got some pretty difficult stretches there. You get Iowa State at home, Texas at home, and then you have to go to Manhattan, which is never an easy thing. You end the season with, of course, the Bedlam game in Norman. You get Texas Tech at home, which is sneaky, and then you get to go to TCU, who obviously Max Duggan is going to be out indefinitely, but by that time TCU will have figured some things out. And Gary Patterson always seems to do a pretty good job against Mike Gundy and his offense, and that's an on-the-road game. Looking at the schedule, I mean, what do you think about it as far as beneficial or difficult for Oklahoma State? Which is the three-game stretch you think is the kind of make-or-break stretch for the season?
Ooh, the three-game stretch ones. That's a good question. I'll answer the first question first, though. I like the way the schedule sets up for the most part, in that it's got kind of that soft open where you got a chance to really build some confidence and figure out who you are. Though this team should kind of know who they are already, with as many veterans as they've got, you know, this is the open to the schedule with Tulsa, West Virginia, Kansas. You get a road game in there to get a little bit of that flavor as well. You know, I like that opening for this team, and then you got that next four game chunk after an open week. You get that four game chunk with Baylor, Iowa State, Texas, and Kansas State. I look at that Iowa State, Texas, and Kansas State stretch, and I want to say, I mean, your gut says you got to include the Bedlam game is the three game stretch is the most important. But I feel like that Iowa State, Texas, and Kansas State going to Kansas State to end that is probably the stretch that is the most important, because Iowa State and Texas, I think, are the two teams that that Oklahoma State's going to be battling with for a berth in the Big 12 title game. And that those are two home games right there coming off of that road trip to Baylor, that if they can go and win those two, they've got themselves in a really good position going into the stretch run from there. So I'm gonna have to say, as weird as it feels to not include Bedlam in the three game stretch that's the most important, I'm gonna say Iowa State, Texas, and Kansas State is stretch that that is the most crucial to Oklahoma State season.
No, I agree. Let's just be honest. Just go ahead and put the L for the game in Norman. It's so hard as an Oklahoma State fan. I'm not going to do that to myself. I'm not going to be like, well, maybe this, just go ahead and put it there, get it out of the way. So if you come in with that mindset and an understanding of you don't have to beat Oklahoma necessarily to get to the Big 12 title game, right, but you are going to probably have to beat both Texas and Iowa State. I agree. Iowa State, Texas, and then a road game at Kansas State. Like, I could go with the road game at Baylor, but you get the idle week. We don't know what Baylor's going to be like. There's so much new for them, and this is not a year where you want to have a lot of new players, young, you know, new starters and new coaches. But for Kansas State, Manhattan's always tricky. I realize that it's a new coaching staff in their second year, but Iowa State's going to be a tough physical game. Texas is going to be a tough physical game, and then you have to go to Kansas State, who plays bully ball. I agree. That is to me the stretch that if they can go through that, at no worse than 2-1, I feel good for Oklahoma State. If they get through the 3-0, great. I think they can, but 2-1 feels like if they can get through that 2-1, and even if that one loss is to Kansas State, they're in a good situation to reach their goals this year of making it to the Big 12 title game for the first time since the title game came back. We all made our season predictions, you know, before everything went crazy and we got these new schedules. Looking at the schedule, what do you think is realistic for Oklahoma State this year? I know how much it's weird to put a lot of pressure on a season that we just don't know how it's going to go and we don't know how many games we're actually going to get and all these other intangibles we can't control. But just looking at the 10-game schedule and the way it's ordered now, what do you think is a realistic expectation record-wise for OSU this season?
You know, I could really see that. I really feel like this is a team that's destined for the Big 12 title game. Whether they can go and pull off a win that they need to get that, or to end the frustration against Oklahoma. I don't know about that yet, but I think that they're the second best team in this conference right now, and the only way to the top is to beat the best. So that's what they're going to have to do. But if I had to sit here and pick it, I would put them at 9-1 on against this schedule that I'm looking at right now. I just with those two crucial games against Iowa State and Texas being at home, and then give you some confidence going on to the road to face Kansas State and go win that game. I think that they're in a really good situation to reel off a lot of wins and head into Bedlam with a really good unbeaten record. So, it's tough for me to predict that they're going to win that game right now, just because of the past, sort of similar to your feelings as a fan. But it's tough to make that call. But I think that they can go and win 9 games and put themselves in position to play for a Big 12 title.
I love the optimism, Scott. I love it. All right. Well, man, Scott, thank you very much for joining us today. I really appreciate your help previewing Oklahoma State. For all the fans who want to follow your work, where can they do so?
Online at oklahoman.com. And of course, get me on Twitter @ScottWrightOK.
Scott, I, you and I DM often. You always are good to talk to and a quick response. I appreciate all of that. It's great to know you. And I, again, really appreciate you taking the time to join us on the show here. It's been a blast, man.
Absolutely. Anytime, man.
Podcast Network.